It's your boy, Tiny Samurai, coming to you with another episode of Tiny Samurai Book Time. So, all, and I'm back with himself, Matt Fevestaves from Element Jiu Jitsu and Dirty Clean Eats. Real quick plug, dirtycleaneats.com. Go check it out. Check them out on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Snapchat, search DCE Pirate Radio Podcast on iTunes. How was that? I got everything there.
You got it all. I didn't even know we had some of those.
That was a quick one. That was a quick one. I'm all over it now. I'm on Snapchat now, so I understand how the social media aspect works. It's got to be across every medium to really be effective, getting your message out there, from what I understand. But I could be wrong. I don't know. Well, with another talk, this time we want to dig into some stuff. I've been thinking about some things, and one of the things that's been playing over in my mind a lot has been optimal training and how to achieve it. And the ways I was thinking about looking at it were training prioritization, intensity, and skill set priority. And having a chat, Matt, we've been going back and forth on messaging. And we thought, hey, don't we podcast? Maybe we should talk about this on the podcast instead of just in Facebook Messenger. And here we are. And now we're talking about it. So first things first, I wanted to touch on training prioritization. So I know that obviously in fighting, I need to make sure that everything is good to go with my physical skill set. I also need to prioritize from a physical standpoint, whether it be strength and conditioning and other stuff. As a coach and a fighter, where would your priority lie during a fight camp and before a fight camp, and they differ?
Well, I think at a basic level, outside of camp is for learning new things and new skills. Camp is for, well, first things first, are you fit enough? If you're not fit enough, the camp's all about getting fit enough.
Yeah.
If you can get fit enough whilst doing other things, it's about cementing in the things you're already good at. And if you're at, not that we've had to go to that level yet, but if you're starting to get to the level where you've got a lot of tape on your opponent, you can start to actually specifically, you wouldn't necessarily learn a new skill set for the opponent, but if you might focus on a skill set that you already have and just make sure it's extra polished if it's something we think might work very well against an opponent. Say, for instance, you throw a great knee and your opponent is a very, very good wrestler. We might do some extra knees.
Yeah, I like it. Now, that's one of the things I've been thinking about recently too in terms of prioritizing my training. I know that with the stuff that I'm looking to do in the near future, I've been thinking more about the round breakdown and the time spent in each encounter within the round, and how can I best utilize my training to mimic that, even though currently I'd still be a while away from fight camp.
Yep.
I'm sort of starting to look at it now and think, do I need to spend a bit more time shoring up all the little holes in terms of, because it's really easy, you know, the skill set side of it, I wouldn't say easier to work on, but it's more enjoyable for most people. And that's why I think the hardest thing to do is then implement the right strategy for your strength and conditioning. So like optimal strength and conditioning or whatever for your chosen sport, the chosen parameters within that sport, that sort of thing. So I've been thinking about like really where I need to put my training, and it's made me think about other people's training. And so I know that for me recently, and we've been talking about it, how can we optimize the time spent during training? Can I work on a skill set and still work on fitness? Yeah, is the fitness I'm doing lend itself to the fight or the training itself too? I don't know about you, but I've always been, always, as soon as I had my own sort of ideas, I'd be against road work. How do you think about like long distance sort of cardio stuff for fighting?
Mine's, A lot of mine is personal. I hate cardio. My thoughts on that. I've spoken to people about it, and I've heard a lot of science, for lack of a better word. Like, there's a lot of things to indicate that long distance or a lot of long distance road work isn't potentially beneficial for fighting. But then on the flip side, I know from personal experience, when I do more longer distance runs, I'm a significantly better fighter in my rounds. So in my personal opinion on it, which it differs from my actions, do what I say, don't do what I do, because, hey, I haven't been for a run in fucking 6 months, man. But my thing with fighting is there's a lot of things that you need. You need a baseline. So, no, you don't need to be the best 10K runner to be a good fighter.
Yeah.
But if you can build up just an average level of going for a run, that baseline cardio, even though it doesn't mimic a fight environment, it's significant. It's very beneficial for your training. Even if it allows you, okay, so you fight for 3 5-minute rounds. So research and science convention would say you should do 3 5-minute rounds, which makes sense for the fight. But no one does 15 minutes worth of fight training. So having that general cardio might even just help you train for your hour and a half or your hour or 4 hours or whatever you're doing. But that baseline cardio allows you to train better. So then because you're training better, without, you're less likely to get injured, you're getting more quality training in. It could be something as simple as that. But I find that reality doesn't quite match what I've heard. And obviously there's a lot of people that love road work, but road work's one of those things that's kind of a bit of the old school gym mentality that I think has a lot of merit to it. What do you think?
I can understand, like, so the baseline thing I agree with.
Yep.
I think if you don't have a baseline, this is the sort of talk that's more towards people anyway that probably already have a fundamental base. They've already been training for X amount of time, have possibly been competing or are looking to compete, that sort of thing. The base level of this is okay. I think if you walk into the sport, take a 5K time, do some of that. That's not a bad thing. I can say for me personally, the way that I tend to break it down, I look at how much time I have in a day, and if I have adult responsibilities, you know, I've got family responsibilities, I've got work, I've got whatever I've got, and I go, I've got this amount of time to train. What I don't want to do is spend that amount of time training, put in 5K, 10K on the road. If I had time to spend, if I had an extra half an hour, 45 minutes, hour, whatever, I can think of thing that are more likely for me anyway. This is just, you know, hyperbole at the minute, but I'd say for me personally, I'd rather spend that 45 minutes working. I can do that boxing, I can do back work, I can do, like, rather than sprints. I can see the benefit in sprints because, for the most part, like, in my mind, is a series of sprints. So I just feel like a lot of the time the cardio isn't a bad thing, but I also feel there's a better use of my time. And the better use of energy output. And like, the thing is, think about everyone that you know that does long distance running. Their shins are beat to shit, their knees are beat to shit, their hips are beat to shit. It's not, that's another thing that doesn't add longevity to me in terms of being the person X amount of minutes a week, X amount of calories. If I want to take a beating on my body, I want that beating to benefit me not just from a cardio base, but from a skill set base. So if I'm looking at spending 4 or 5 minutes or an hour doing something, half an hour, whatever it is, I would rather do 10 trees on the bag at a higher pace because, A, I'm getting the cardiovascular output, B, I'm refining skill set. And that probably come down to a point that I want to bring up later anyway about training intensity and like the purpose behind each training sort of thing. But I just feel like if I'm short on time, like most people are, I don't want to spend the time doing something that I don't necessarily see as giving me a massive benefit for my fighting. I can see the general health benefits, you know, for that baseline fitness benefit. But I think in terms of time management and output versus reward, I can see better ways to spend my time.
Yeah, well, and I suppose every time I've done it, it's been in addition to my normal training. So who's to say that doing 20 minutes on the bag on top of my training or my normal training have also increased my fitness? Like it may be the fact that I'm doing extra, not specifically what I'm doing extra.
Yeah. I can see it from a bit like, all right, if you're weight, dropping weight, losing weight, I can see the added benefit of tacking on another cardio session.
Yeah.
But in saying that as well, if I want to do that, I chuck my gear on and I do more rounds on the bed. Or I can skip because I can do it in place, I can do it in time. But realistically, if I'm thinking of that skill set perspective as well as added cardio benefit and the calories or whatever it is, I can just think that I'd rather spend the time punching the bag and not beating myself up. And look, if you don't want to punch the bag, I'd pick stationary bike over running anyway, from a not beating my knees up, not beating my shins and my feet and shit up. That's just me. I'd rather sit on the bike and listen to a podcast or something for half an hour and chuck, you know, 10K or whatever it is under my belt on that instead. But yeah, I think from that time management perspective, like you're saying, if you're doing it on top of other training, if you're already doing duodates, I'd find it hard to get the time. If you're a hobbyist, you know, if you're a pro fighter, you probably don't have time for it. And I think that's the thing too. Like, I had the choice. Now, technically, I'm a hobbyist, right? So I had the choice, and I had to make a choice between going for a run or doing bag work, fair enough. I mean, if you had instead, even better. If I haven't got the bag there, if I can only shadow box, I'd rather do 10 threes all out shadow boxing or 5 fives or whatever it is, whatever you're training for. But I can understand why people would grab it. Look, it's easy to go for a run, so that's the other thing.
Yeah.
It's easy to just go out and go for a run. But I think in terms of time versus reward, there's better uses of the time, and I think there's more sport-specific time that you could be spending on the bag. Even just shadow boxing. We've spoken about this, and this is something that I try and preach to everyone. I don't even skip. I don't, like, I understand the idea of it. I'm warming up. Well, rather than doing that, I'm going to do whatever rounds I will be doing skipping, I do full work. And I like to think I have reasonable pull work. If I'm thinking of my skill set, one of my stronger attributes is probably my pull work.
Yeah.
And I think it comes down to spending just bulk time doing pull work rounds. One of the guys I really love watching, Dominic Cruz, amazing pull work, really unconventional, always moving. And if you watch him training, he will do X amount of rounds just pull work. And then he'll start incorporating strikes, and then he'll get into his training. And I think that's a better use of the time. If I am going to skip, why not refine a skill set? You know, that's one of the things, like, so now to touch on sort of really focusing on the skill set aspect of it, the problem that I would see with most people is training intention. And in terms of, like, if I'm thinking about footwork, or, like, you think about it, you see people do shadow boxing, whatever. Lazy, lackadaisical, just going through the motions, talking shit, rolling the arms over. It's a waste of time. Don't bother. Don't do it.
Yeah.
That's not what it's there for. The idea is that, like, at the end of those three rounds, I should almost feel like I've sparred three rounds without being hit. I should be breathing. I should be sweating. I should have my heart rate up because I've treated them like I'm fighting without an opponent.
Yeah.
Buzz Rutten talks about it. He talks about the way that he used to do cards and how at the end of it, he'd be dripping in sweat, he'd be breathing heavy, he'd be really tired because he was treating it like he was fighting imaginary opponents and he was putting 100% effort into all these movements and refining those little things. I think that has a stronger crossover effect. I think if I'm spending my first three rounds, rather than skipping, if I'm spending it shadow boxing, I'm refining the skill set with the added benefit of warming up, and from doing it hard, the added benefit of the cardio. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, and it ties into something that I've been playing with. Like, and I always go back to grappling because I'm better at grappling. than striking. Like I always say, like, I'm probably a blue belt in striking, and that's, you know, that might be being generous. You know, and it's very MMA striking. You know what I mean? Like, you can start talking about there's some
high level striking.
Yeah. It's like there's a difference between, you know, possible effective MMA striking and being a great boxer or a great kickboxer as well.
Yeah, of course.
I know what I am. So, like, I go back to grappling because that I understand more, and I very much it hasn't even been that long. So I'm a 4-stripe purple belt, and it's probably been only the last 6 months, really. It's actually been since I've started coaching a lot more that it's dawned on me is this concept you're talking about intention. And part of it, I actually took it as a strength. So my approach is, when I first started training, I used to love coming to training and basically turning my brain off. Like, there was no plan, conscious thought, intention. I wasn't working on anything. I didn't have a mind map. I'd rock up the training. I would do whatever coach taught for the night, and then we'd roll, and I'd just turn my brain off and do whatever I felt like.
Yeah.
And then I think there's certainly an advantage to that up to a point. And I also think the advantage of that is like, you know, you're instinctual. Like, if you're not thinking, that's you've just eliminated a second out of the process.
Like the lag time. Yeah, yeah.
But then, and the reason that I suppose the benefits outweigh the detriment is because when I was a white belt, like, it didn't matter. I was shit at everything. Like, so it didn't matter if I had a plan or not. Like, as long as I trained, I was gonna learn something. Again, you know, blue belt, even as a purple belt. And it's like, it's only really been lately, especially when I've gone out of myself to try and understand other people's thought patterns. Because it's amazing how having to do it for someone else makes you care. It's like, you know, I don't worry about myself. I wouldn't implement these strategies for myself because, like, fuck that guy. But as soon as I'm responsible for someone else, I'm like, I'm learning about human learning patterns and different ways of doing things. And it's really been the last 3 to 6 months I've been playing around with. And I think it's some of the concepts you're saying is that there's only so many hours in a day. And especially in something like jiu-jitsu, where you can't be the best at everything. You could be the best at everything, and then someone will come out with something new, and you're not the best at that. Like, it's impossible to be the best at everything in jiu-jitsu. You've got to have a style. I've obviously developed a certain type of style, and maybe that style aligns itself to someone whose brain isn't working. But it's got to the point now where if I just randomly do whatever technique we're doing, like, if I'm a top guard player, why did I just spend 6 months learning some intricate X guard game? And it's like, well, you don't play De La Hiva to play Serpent to get X, so why are you learning about X guard? And if that didn't lose half your viewers, hopefully enough jiu-jitsu people joined in board for all the strikers that you lost. But, like, you know,
oh,
what I mean?
Shit.
Like, if you just leave it up to chance after a certain point,
yeah,
all you're doing is slowing down your own learning.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really playing with that lately. And it's a hard, because it's not the way my brain works.
No, I'm with you on that as well. You know, when I started thinking about the conventional stuff more from a striking perspective is when I started grappling.
Yeah.
Because previously, I could show you the technique. I could show you how I did the technique.
Yeah.
You know, if I was showing someone, I'd be like, well, this is how I land, or this is how I slip, or whatever it may be, this is how I set up a little trick. But I wasn't necessarily thinking about where it goes from there. And one of the things I think I got more interested in about that drilling style of training after being involved with grappling and seeing the linking aspect of it. I think where people fall over is maybe just learning the technique, not learning the intention behind the technique, not learning what my intention needs to be if it goes either way.
The concept we use a lot in jiu-jitsu.
The concept.
Like, teach a man to fish.
And he gets fish.
Yes. Something good.
Yeah.
He's going to have sashimi.
Jiu-jitsu fish.
Jiu-jitsu fish.
But that's the thing. I've been thinking more about that for myself. And like you said, it's placing like coaching. And I've had to think about it because I'm like, well, you know, this is the push kick. well, but why do I move my foot that way? And does me moving my foot that way work for you moving that foot, your foot that way? And what happens when my opponent does this and this and this? I think one of the biggest things that people fall over on is the intention behind the technique, and my intention pre and post technique. That's a hard concept too. Like, what's my intention need to be before? Like, my combo is the intended action. What do I do before that, though? My intention would be this, 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 then this happens. Now, my, all right, now you do that. Your intention is this. I think it's like that. I can drill more of that. And this goes back to the cardio side of it. I can drill more of that doing 10 rounds of shadow, and I can get the added cardio benefit and the added learning benefit as long as I have the right intention while I'm with it. So I can cut time in terms of training throughout the course of the day, the added learning benefit of doing the shadow boxing, and I can sort of think about, I can think about the context, I can think about my intention behind each combination and how I'd implement it. So I think in terms of a time intimate perspective and how I would look at breaking it down, that's where I lean. In terms of, and look, and that's a personal thing. And if I was talking to someone else, it might be, if you're a brand new guy, but striking white belt and you're walking into the gym with me, I'm probably going to need you to skip at some point because your shadow boxing is going to be where you're going to get enough of a warm-up.
It's so average, it's not. You might as well skip.
You're not going to get enough of a warm-up in doing three rounds of four garbage.
Yeah.
And that's fine. Think about it in the same way, like every jiu-jitsu warm-up you don't do when you do front rolls and you do shrimping. Yeah. If I walked in there and I don't know how to shrimp, I'm not warming up when I shrimp.
Yeah, warm on shrimps, yeah.
Yeah, I'm learning how to shrimp.
Yep.
It's the same concept. If I don't know footwork yet, I'm not going to warm up during footwork. So then I think a lot of this talk is probably more someone who's already got base muscle level. I've made the choices because I spent years being told to run by my coaches. I had to get up and go do a drill. I spent years doing mental skipping out of every class because that's what I got told to do. I did it. But as I became more of my own.
Yeah, oh, and maybe you've training. Paid your dues with the skipping, so now you don't need to skip as much. Well. Like maybe there's a.
I've done the rounds, so yeah. I know that I personally can get enough of a warm up out of doing footwork drills before shadow boxing, and I know I can get enough of a out of shadow that if I'm doing it correctly, it lends itself more, I think, to my training. But like you said, if you've paid your dues, you've done the rounds and rounds. That's where the transfer is.
Yep.
One of the things I want to touch on, so we've sort of like, we've looked at intention behind what you're doing. We've looked at, implementing, we've talked about the cardio aspect, like how I would work, that sort of thing. I want to talk about training intensity. One of the things that we've been talking about, when we go back and forth on this regularly, we spoke about your podcast as well, the DVE Pirate Radio podcast. Episode 25, that was the one I was on. We spoke about the concept of sparring and the intensity level behind the sparring.
Yeah.
And I basically went out and made a bold statement and said that you don't need to stop.
Yeah, the same as you don't need to skip, as long as you've learned to skip.
As long as you've learned to skip, right? So yeah.
It's more of a you don't need to spar. Past a certain point. Or you don't need to spar as much past a certain point.
And the thing is as well, we spoke about the fact that like you don't need to spar. And what I meant by you don't need to spar is that you don't need to punch on in the gym every day.
Yeah, you're thinking of something very specific when you say this word spar, whereas a lot of people might classify things that you do think you should do as sparring as well.
Yeah. When I talk about sparring, the thing that sort of, I guess, worries me in terms of training, right? I've spent way too many years around striking gyms, seeing kickboxing, whatever, and I've seen way too many punchy people, and the majority of those punchy people didn't get punchy in fights.
Yeah.
They left their best rounds in the gym because every day they went into the gym and they sparred hard every night.
Yeah.
And now they all slur and they can't do shit because they've all got CTE. You don't necessarily, I don't think you get that continued concussive effect from a fight, because if you think about how many shots you take in a fight before you go to sleep or the rest of us in, it's probably not as much. You're wearing sort of gloves, you're more likely to cut, all that sort of stuff. There's other stuff involved. Whereas if we're sparring and I'm wearing shin guards and 16-ounce gloves, I can punch the fuck out of you for 10 rounds.
Yeah.
May not knock you out, but I'm slashing your brain for 30
minutes. You're going to have
a headache. Right. And how many times, like, I know after sparring shit, I've had a headache. I'm like, oh, man, I've got to get a foot headache. Well, that's my body telling me there's something wrong.
Yeah.
So I don't believe my best friends in the gym. When I was talking before about training intensity, we spoke about training intensity previously and how hard I want to go when I'm doing shadow and how hard I want to go when I'm doing, you know, other rounds. Or if, like, if I'm on the back, I need the back to mimic a fight.
Yes.
Well, I want my sparring to mimic a fight as much as possible, but I also don't want to take the damage.
Yep.
Hard sparring, as far as I'm concerned, should be left for a fight camp. If you're a fighter and you have a fight camp, you need to spar hard. So to clear that up for anyone that had any questions previously, I'm not saying you can get away with never sparring hard. You obviously need to spar hard.
There's some timing that you can't, that there's a millisecond you can't get any other way.
And it's the pressure level and it's the intensity, and I understand that.
And the risk in that situation is worth the reward.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yep.
But I've done a million fucking rounds. So I understand the difference between the two.
Do you think... Okay, again, I'll use my jiu-jitsu, like a brand new striker.
Mm-hmm.
Is there X amount of sparring just as a baseline so they know what it is that you think they need? Because, like, everyone that I've spoken to that says you don't need to, like, that has this kind of, you don't need to spar, or, you know, it's for peak conditioning. They all did hard sparring. Like, it's that anymore thing. And it's like, dude, and I've always wanted to ask someone, like, do you think that if you had your current mindset from the beginning, you could get away with it?
It's hard because I don't think that I've necessarily made my best in learning leaps during hard sparring from a skill set perspective.
No, you can't.
Because you win it. But from a mentality perspective, I probably have. Now, me personally, my style of fighting isn't force to the wall, head against head, and we're just going to bang until someone falls over.
Yeah.
I like to think I'm probably more technical than that. I'm more of a counter striker.
Happy feet.
I'm more of a defensive guy. So hard sparring for me probably isn't going to be the same as hard sparring for someone else anyway.
Yeah.
But I think that if you're walking into the gym, clean slate, you definitely need to spar.
Yeah.
If you want to be a fighter. But if you're looking at it, I would say once a week, maybe for the first 6 months.
Yeah.
That's going to give you the experience that you need. And it's going to get you used to learning what it's like to be hit, what it's like to feel that pressure of someone trying to hurt you.
You're going to know if you've got it in you or not. That's what I think you need to do, though.
Well, that's interesting.
You need to know.
You should probably get away with that. You know what? I think you get more better going to other things to spar than that sense as well. I see a lot of guys will spar 3 times a week in the home gym.
Yep.
And or more. And they just end up murdering each other. Whereas I think that you could go to another gym every fortnight, once a fortnight, go to another gym.
Yep.
Get 3 rounds in. And I think that is more beneficial than sparring 6 times a fortnight.
Yeah.
I think from a skill set perspective, you're able to hone it a lot more. Pad work, bag work, shadow work, flow sparring. One of the things I try and implement with guys as well is not... When people think flow sparring, they think jiu-jitsu flow sparring, and it's probably something similar, but I just want to... not light in the sense... That's the other issue I see when I see training intention. When guys spar light,
yeah,
they do shit that they don't do normally.
Yeah.
This goes back to the shadow side. This goes back to bad work. This goes back to everything. If it isn't with intention, it's a waste of fucking time. If I'm doing it and my shadow work doesn't look how I fight, waste of rounds. If I'm doing it and my bad work doesn't look the way I fight, yep, it's a waste of rounds.
Yeah.
Pad work, waste. If I'm light sparring and it looks the way that I look,
yep,
when I spar hard or when I fight, that's the best sparring.
Yep.
From a longevity perspective, because I can do that every night. I can light spar every night.
Yeah.
When I tell guys that I don't believe in sparring, it's because if you just say, all right, we're sparring, what do guys normally do? Fight down on their mouth guard and try and knock each other out. Exactly right. Yeah, that's what happens.
Yeah.
They just go, I'm just going to throw left hooks and right overhands. That's it. If we
not
do
my technique,
a lot of... Yeah, like, and that's how it works, you know, like, because the adrenaline kicks in and the pressure kicks in and... But if we're light sparring, I can light spar 6 days a week.
Yeah.
Tap for tap for tap for tap. But I've got to make sure that when I'm doing it, my jab looks nice and tight.
Yeah.
My kicks look nice and tight. You, as my partner, need to tap me. You need to touch me and let me know when you threw that kick, you got lazy and I want to tag you. Because then I know I'm teaching myself, yeah, oh, I'm going to throw that, I'm going to do this.
That's the interesting right? point. It's very reliant on you having a good training partner as well, flow sparring, because
and
I've done some flow sparring rounds,
yeah,
with people and
they weren't very good.
Yeah, well they either the biggest one that annoys me the most, like everyone goes a bit hard, but that's that one doesn't bother me that much. Like, it's like that's why you need someone there. Like if I'm doing a flow round with one of the people I train with, I need someone to tell me to flow. Like it's something you do need.
Yeah.
It's something like the escalator. There's a reason that you're doing this for a sport. Like it's very hard to maintain, and you aim to keep maintained. But it always the fifth flow round is always a little bit harder than the first flow round.
Yeah.
But the one that really fucking annoys me, and it's on pads or flow, is when someone throws a strike that's unrealistic. So
yes.
Yeah. So it's like no one's ever going to throw a weird loopy uppercut from that position. Like it's just
no.
It's not realistic. So you're teaching me an almost impossible situation. Like it's just not effective to do that. So they're the ones I'm like,
yeah,
what am I doing here? Like this is a bit of a waste of time.
So this comes back to everything else we're talking about then as well. There needs to be a base level. So there's not a magical number in terms of like how many sparring sessions or how many rounds or whatever it is you need to do hard sparring.
Yeah.
I would say though, once you've got that sort of foundation level and you realize whether you want to do it or not, and you can refine your skill a little bit and you've worked out who you are as a fighter a little bit, the flow rounds become a lot easier.
Yeah.
I know what type of a fighter I am and I know what my skill set is and I know what strikes I'm comfortable with.
Yeah.
And you might try some stuff anyway. I might try a new strike or a new setup. But like you're saying, as long as it's realistic and that's the intention part, I need to make sure that what I'm doing has the correct intention.
Yeah.
If I'm not throwing something that I would throw in a fight, if I'm just doing it for shits and giggles, there's no point.
What's the point?
I know from experience that there's stuff that I can do in boxing that I can't do in other shit.
Yeah.
Right? But if I'm an MMA guy and I'm training boxing,
yeah,
my boxing sparring needs to look the way that I'm going to box in an MMA fight. Same in boxing, anything, right? Otherwise, I'm spending time, energy, effort, and brain cells on a skill set that I'm not going to integrate into my chosen sport. If you're a boxer,
yeah,
box, that's cool, 100%. That's a thing. But if I'm an MMA guy and I'm training boxing, the boxing needs to replicate how I box for MMA.
Yeah. Well, you're one of the people, though, that I've noticed. Like when I'm thinking back in the day when we did sparring, the difference between the different rounds, you had a definitive different style, which obviously because you've competed in different sports, there's a reason to do it. But I remember like you were the first person that I'd seen that I noticed it, where I'm like, oh, his stance is different, his movement is different, and his patterns are different. Because that moved me away because I'm like, he's speaking three different languages because we did a boxing round, a kickboxing round. and an MMA round. And I'm like,
yeah,
it, like, because mine's this. I took the opposite approach. The same. My jiu-jitsu is the same. Is whether I'm like, I do gi jiu-jitsu, but you won't see me do a gi choke very often. Like I started doing jiu-jitsu with MMA in mind. So whilst I put the gi on and I competed in gi and I did that, I didn't spend a lot of time. I was going to say waste. I didn't spend a lot of time learning a cross collar choke because my goal was to do no gi and do MMA. So it's the same type of thing as, you know, the boxing was for MMA. So I didn't spend a heap of time learning like a duck and weave because, yeah, again, head kick.
That, I can, and I know that I can't. And like you said, the reason that I do it is because if you've competed in all of them and I understand the difference in all of them, as long as I'm not doing things in the MMA round that I'm doing the boxing round that I can't get away with, I'm good.
Yeah.
But that takes a lot of time and a heap of rounds on each.
Yep.
So if I'm, but like the thing, if I was just training for MMA, then I'm trying to be Floyd Mayweather, Philly shoulder roll.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to work. I'm going to get a shin upside the head. So I need to be aware of that, or I'm going to get double legged, or, you know, I can't do the same stuff in boxing that I can do in kickboxing, and I can do the same stuff in like K1 style kickboxing as I would in Muay Thai. It doesn't, that's not an answer.
And
as
it's,
well.
It's hard because you're disadvantaging yourself.
Mm.
You are, when you're training, and like, this is assuming your goal is MMA, obviously.
Mm.
But when you're training the individual disciplines, you have to put yourself at a disadvantage because you don't have the full skill set. Like, if I'm competing against someone in the gi and I'm ruling out doing a cross collar choke, because that wouldn't help me with my chosen sport.
Yeah.
I'm at a disadvantage. And that's going to get real, that's going to get real hard for you to, it's making it harder for you. Like, you have less options than the other person.
So that comes back again to the intention piece.
Yeah.
So like we keep coming back to that, and there's a reason we keep coming back to whether it's intentional or not. So the intention piece is, what is my intended outcome with it? Am I training striking for MMA?
Yeah.
Yes, okay. I can train boxing. I can go to a boxing club and I can work with a boxing trainer, but my boxing needs to replicate the way that I would box in an MMA fight.
Yes.
I can go do jiu-jitsu, and like you're saying, I should be thinking about what I'm doing in an MMA fight. I can't necessarily barambolo. I'm just going to heap the time barambolo.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to use it.
Yeah.
Unless I work out some way to do it without a gi. But then what's the, like, the benefit then? The second I start inverting, I'm going to get punched in the face a lot, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So I need to take...
It's not unheard of, but is that...
No,
is
of
that
course.
Is that the best and easiest way to success?
Is that the best use of my time?
Yeah.
Is that the best, you know, if I'm training intensely all the time, is it, you know, worth using some of that intensity towards a minute partial skill set when I'm thinking about broad spectrum? If you're a gay guy, yeah, do it. Cool. Absolutely. 100%. And on the same end of the spectrum, like if I'm thinking about, like, from a striking perspective, if I'm boxing, if I'm a boxer, I will start looking at cross guard. I will look at Philly shoulder roll. I will look at a bunch of other stuff that won't necessarily translate very well to other sports.
Yeah.
But that's if I'm just boxing. And I can look at that stuff if I'm thinking about it for MMA, but I think that there's better uses of my time. It comes back to that again.
Yeah.
There's better uses of my time in terms of a training perspective. Should I be focused on partial minute portions of my skill set? Should I be focused on long, slow distance running? Should I be focused on these things? Or should I be focused on, well, rather than spending 20 minutes at the start of my session going for a quick warm-up run Thailand style, I'm going to do, you know, seven threes footwork. And then I'm going to do 3-3 shadow. And then I'm going to do 5-3 pads.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to do 5-3 band, but it all needs to replicate the same thing. The skill set needs to look the same from start to finish, because otherwise
I'm spending X amount. I think we've spoken about this in class before too. Like when I've been training with you, we've spoken about like if I'm doing Dutch drills. So this is a really good example. Like if I'm doing Dutch drills and I spend half the night and I'm throwing a kick, I'm throwing a, you know, like a 1-2-3 low kick, and I know that you're going to counter it. If I throw shit as the person, I know I'm getting countered, I'm wasting half the night.
Yeah.
I need to throw it correctly, and you as my opponent need to counter it correctly, and that way I'm still learning the motor patterns of the drill.
Yeah.
You're countering it because you know what's coming. Now, you might know what's coming in a fight anyway, but I still want to throw it properly.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing with my footwork. It's the same thing with my shadow sparring. It's the same thing with my bag work. One of the things I'm implementing with my bag work at the minute is I'm breaking it down. So one of the things I'm looking at doing is competing in Spart Nationals later this year, which is French kickboxing.
Yep.
It's a tournament format, so it's like a 3-round fight, and then if you win, you move on to the next 3-round fight.
And you wear fancy pants.
I wear fancy pants, and I get to wear wrestling boots. Fantastic.
Because wrestling was invented in France.
Because I'm going to take the fuck out of someone's thigh with this shit. I've been thinking about the way that I would break down my bag work. So rather than just getting to a rhythm of doing, I'm going to do 12 rounds on the bag or whatever,
yep.
Rather than do 12 rounds, because I know I'll set my own internal pace for those 12 rounds, I'm doing it in blocks of three.
Yep.
With a shorter rest break, higher intensity, comes back to that intensity part, comes back to that intention part. What's the intention of the round? I want the round to mimic a fight. What's the fight going to be? The fight is three rounds, high intensity. Okay, so I need to replicate that as closely as possible. And I do that by doing 4 times 3 times whatever the round is, whatever the break is. And have a longer break between those blocks of rounds. And the way that that then helps me break down is this is what the fight, like this is what tournament day will feel like. Because that's the intention of the training. If I'm just doing it for cardio, I can just do 12 threes chill. I can just set up a pace like I would for a long distance run, but I just do it on the bag instead.
Yeah.
So that comes back to that intention piece and that intensity piece. My intensity becomes higher because my intention is fight day.
Yeah.
But if my intention was just general block, base level cardio, I can just do 12 threes and I can just standard pace, 3-minute rounds, 1-minute break or whatever it is, or 30-second break or whatever it is, and just go through the motions. And I think that's where the difference is going to be. As long as I have the right intention and the right intensity for what training I'm doing, then we're good to go. If you have the right intention behind flow sparring, you're good to go. If you have wrong intensity, it's a waste.
I've got a clickbait question for you.
Go on.
We probably should have put this at the start, but hey, I'm sure you can put something in
the comments. No, now they're going
to wait to the end for the big reveal.
We'll say, wait until minute or whatever, click and wait, because this is coming bombshell.
Yeah. So I was thinking about it in my head. I'm like, I was going to start this with, I'm sure you've been in this position. But then I thought about it. It's kind of a grappler focused MMA person's position.
Yeah.
Where
okay.
There's people where, you know, back again, going back a few years, but there's people where I would box or I'd kick box against. Like, a lot of our training used to be, you do some boxing rounds, you do some kickboxing rounds, you do some MMA rounds, like it progressed. And like, I remember a few people in particular where they beat the shit out of me in boxing.
Yeah.
Or kickboxing rounds. And then we did an MMA round of which I didn't go for any grappling. And it was even, or I got the upper hand in the round.
Yeah.
So my question is, Mayweather versus McGregor. Clickbait.
Yeah. Yeah.
In an MMA cage.
Yeah.
No grappling happens. No kicks are thrown.
Okay.
Not by legal agreement. Like, it's not in the rules. It's just for whatever reason, it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Who do you think wins? The threat of a kick, the threat of a takedown is there, but only mentally. It's not, this might be a, hey, this is why it's clickbait. You can't be wrong, though, because it's a nonsense question. But like,
Well, you got Connor behind you too, so he's waiting. He's watching.
He's waiting for your answer.
Shit. Okay.
I liberated this from the UFC in Melbourne.
Nice.
Yep.
I think I've got some that I've done the same thing with on the wall over there, but it's not in focus, so don't worry about it. I would say, because if you're, it's hard because if it's an unspoken agreement.
I realized as I said it, it's kind of a silly question.
No, but so like it's always going back to the hypothetical. It's like, all right, if Floyd can beat him with 10-ounce gloves boxing, can he beat him with 4-ounce gloves boxing? I think if you just went hand for hand, if Connor can't kick, if Connor can't clinch, if Connor can't elbow, Floyd will box him up from the outside pretty comfortably. Is it in a ring or in a cage? Because that changes it too. If you watch Floyd defensively on the ropes, he gets a lot of lean back.
Yeah.
And he can't do that against the cage. So I think that definitely adds something to it. I would say that if you had it where Floyd doesn't have to worry about the takedown, doesn't have to worry about kicks, doesn't have to worry about elbows or knees, then Floyd probably wins. If it's boxing with 4-ounce gloves, if you put them in a bare knuckle boxing fight, Floyd wins because it's still boxing. But the second that Connor can kick, Connor wins. The second he can kick.
So you think that's because that's essentially what we're doing, which is what we're trying to determine. Floyd Mayweather is a better boxer than Conor McGregor.
No question.
Conor McGregor is a better...
Oh, dude, I think it stopped recording.
Oh, mine's still going, so we might be okay.
Oh, we're good, because mine stopped recording at 22 minutes.
Okay, we should be okay.
Oh, no, it didn't record at all.
Ah, then we've got mine then.
Lucky.
Yep. So at what point is that crossing over? So where is the point? You know, and because it's probably... a whole heap of variables. So, like, I would say that Conor McGregor has a better chance of beating Floyd Mayweather in a bare-knuckle boxing match. Maybe not bare-knuckle, maybe because that's a different spot for both of them, but in a boxing match in MMA gloves than he does in a boxing match. And then if you take it out of the ring into a cage, his chances go up. Maybe it's 0.001%, but ring is...
Still, it's...
Yeah, it's a, so where... So you reckon that crossover point is let him use his kicks. So if it was just kickboxing is no knees, no elbows, yeah?
K1, so then depends on the kickboxing rules as well. It changes again. If you said K1, it's no clinch, it's knees, but no clinch. Yeah. And they changed it for a little while where you could have like a single collar. I don't know if they've changed it back. And then you've got stuff like low kick, which is essentially... was like one of the first incarnations, I guess, of kickboxing, which is boxing with kicks. Yeah. That's essentially what it was. You can leg kick, you can body kick, head kick, whatever. Savate, pretty similar, except you're allowed to kick to the front of the thigh, which I don't think a low kick can. I don't think you can push kick the legs. I think the second that you add, if you make it just a kickboxing fight, no knees, if you make it a low kick fight, Connor, 100%. Because the second he can kick, the second he can leg kick, if you take the world's best boxer, and there's fights that are out there like it, though. I want to say Ray Mercer had a K1 fight and just got the shit whipped out of his legs by a big Russian dude.
That's the one thing I miss about, like, the old school. Like, we're probably never going to see that again.
We're not. Look, it's not on a high level. Not on a high level. Because we've had those questions answered anyway. Who wins in this fight? Well, if you put an MMA guy against if you put the best MMA guy against the best boxer in the world in a boxing fight, the boxer wins.
But what would happen if you got a good kickboxer and a good boxer and they fought?
Like, I've still got them all on VCR. I've still got like tag team kickboxing on video and shit, like all random shit.
I kind of want to we already know, but I want to know again. And I don't.
I don't think
it'll ever happen, because
the argument's always like, oh, what if Connor learnt? What if Floyd learnt leg? Like, what if he learned how to check kicks?
Okay.
Yeah, he could. But is his checking going to be up to snuff with Connor's kicks in the space of 6 months? And we've had those questions answered from an MMA perspective. Definitely, you had guys like James Toney trying to fight Randy Couture, and he got ankle picked in about 5 seconds.
How hard did he train? Like, it's weird. Like, again, I just like seeing.
It's hard. That's the hard thing too.
I like freak show fights too. We're massively getting off on a tangent, but like
we are.
That my inner fan at heart. Like, I love me some mismatches. Like some. Let's see what happens between this fight, this style, this style. I love me like a full on freak show fight.
Yep.
I want to see what happens. As long as I don't like someone getting beat up, but I like a. Like, I'd like to see a really, really good 70-kilo guy fight an average 110-kilo guy and just see what happens.
I think that they definitely still have...
Japan.
Well, they still have that, but they still have fights where you'll have, like... So a really good one that they did a while back was a Sander team versus the shootboxing team.
Yeah.
It was like five guys in five weight divisions. Andy Sauer was on it. That's how I remember it. And it was like best of five. And it was, you know, they all fought off and shootboxing won 3-2 or whatever. And so that was people from different styles, but they were able to fight under the same rule set and it was similar enough that it was competitive.
Yeah.
So I think that would be the difference. If you could have people that... It was close enough that it wasn't a mismatch. Because that's the thing. I mean, all right, in all fairness, Conor boxed way better than I thought he would against Floyd. And Floyd boxed differently against Conor than he has previously since his early days as a pro. In a kickboxing fight, then like a K1 fight, Conor murders him. In an MMA fight, he murders him worse. Floyd is arguably the best pound-for-pound boxer ever. People don't need to like him. You don't need to like him as a person to understand that he is a very special talent. If I was to pick my top five pound for pound, he's in it for sure. Like if you talk top five pound for pound boxers of all time, he's in it. Like I don't even really question it at this point. The others are all way harder for me to quantify. But I'm also really well aware of his limiting skill set in terms of anything else. Well, he can't kick. He doesn't know how to get kicked.
Could you get that, again, back to your intention and training time?
Yeah.
Could you become the world's best boxer and also spend Fridays learning how to kick?
I think you're better off going back the other way.
Yeah.
So I think you've got guys like Nicky Holtzkin and Tyrone Spong, who are both, like, easily, you know, some of the top kickboxers in the world. You know, like K1, Glory, like that sort of stuff. And they've been doing really well in professional boxing. But their style also lends to it. That Dutch style of kickboxing lends itself to boxing because Dutch style is boxing with kicks.
Would they have been better boxers if they just did boxing from the beginning, though? Like,
of course they would. Yeah, of course they would.
Champion, you could have been better if you'd, you know, you've got to, you can't have your cake and eat it too. Like, again, there's only so many hours in a day.
So many hours in the day and training intention. So we end up coming back full circle with that.
Somehow, my nonsense question.
We worked it out. But that's his training intention. So Conor's intention wasn't to be the world's best boxer.
No.
Conor's intention was to be the UFC champ, and he did that. And then his intention was to make $100 million, and he did that. But his intention wasn't necessarily to be the best boxer in the world. Floyd's intention
is going to wrestle a goddamn bear.
I hope so. I hope that happens.
We've seen someone wrestle a bear. He's going to head kick a bear. You heard it here first. Conor McGregor.
We've called it. Done.
Head kick.
Irish baseball bat. Yep. Done. I think that if you want to be the best at a given sport, train for that given sport. I think that there's guys that could definitely cross over from one to another. So there's definitely guys that can cross over from MMA back to another striking art or back to another grappling art. And they do it all the time because they're already training that skill set. But you can't necessarily... I don't believe that you can be a recognized world champion mixed martial artist and a recognized world champion boxer.
Yeah.
Or, you know, but in saying that, I think that you have more chance of being a world champion kickboxer at the same time as being a world champion mixed martial artist because the skill set transfers better.
There's less to make up.
There's less to drop off.
Yeah.
And it's like it's such a sport of nuance. And the same thing that, like, you can be really good at grappling in MMA, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you'll win the EBI Invitational.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's just how it is.
Well, I can tell you, and you probably don't win the no-gi. Like, it's so specialized.
That's how it works. When you get to that sort of level, when you're the best boxer in the world, you're not going to go try and be the best MMA guy at the same time. It's not going to work. And vice versa. And fair call. And that's about hours in the day, training intention, training purpose, training intensity, how much effort and how much time and how much work can I put in for this given sport. And if you're a professional, it's different. If you're a hobbyist, it's different again. But I need to make sure that I'm putting the work in for the sport that I choose, and the intensity is correct and the intention is correct, because otherwise I'm spinning my wheels. I like it.
I think we're done.
All right. We'll wrap it up. Once again, thank you to Matt for coming on, being on the podcast. Also, thank you for recording, because I didn't record on my end, apparently. Lucky. And I didn't check until minute fucking like 50.
We don't know if mine worked yet. Let's not get too excited.
Well, I'll soon find out. Hopefully it does, because otherwise that's an hour of my life.
We'll have to talk to each other again.
We will have to do it. I'm sure that we will. Thank you. Once again, check out DirtyClanates.com. Search DirtyClanates on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Snapchat, DCE, Pirate Radio Podcast on iTunes. Check out Element Jiu-Jitsu on Facebook and Instagram.
We have an Instagram too. Yeah.
You do.
You just remind
me. You do, I know. Because I tag you on stuff. So also check out Tiny Sumo on Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, YouTube, and iTunes. Search Tiny Sumo. It should come up on all of those. Thanks again for listening. Peace.
Bye.
Boy. That's it. That's a wrap.